the UCR Podcast.
Well, we hope you're having a good weekend as you're hearing this, or whatever day it might be as you're pressing play. I just got back from an estate sale, which, as you might know, these things can be dangerous for us as music fans, and this was no exception for me. Some of the good scores: a promo LP of Sabotage by Black Sabbath with the promo sticker on the front cover, a whole box of vintage magazines, including a huge stack of Crawdaddies from the 70s. I was really excited to come across those. And then from the 80s and 90s, various copies of Rip, Circus, and Hit Parader, including some really cool Kiss magazines. And like you guys, we have been really, really sad about the loss of original Kiss guitarist Ace Frehley. Also like you, we've been listening to the albums, looking at these old magazines, concert videos. Let's face it, we're all down the rabbit hole right now, aren't we? And we've been putting up a lot of stuff at the UCR website about Kiss and about Ace that you might want to look at if you haven't seen it yet. And something else I'll highlight for Kiss fans: the 50th anniversary box set of Dressed to Kill came out this past Friday on digital, featuring a bunch of alternate takes and demos, and also two complete Kiss live shows from 1975. And if you haven't heard any of it yet, take a listen, because the live stuff in particular is fantastic. We're probably going to have a few new podcast episodes for your enjoyment as we get into a new week. Today's episode features a conversation I had with Jeff Pilston of Foreigner. We talked about how things wrapped up with Kelly Hansen, who did his last concert with the band earlier this month. Jeff told us the origin story about how Mick Jones put Foreigner back together 20 years ago. Then we talked about everything that they've got going on presently, including the arrival of singer Luis Maldonado, the new music that they've been working on recently as they finish off some great stuff in the archives with Lou Gramm. And we talked about a lot of things with Jeff, and he had some exciting, exciting things to share with us. It is Matt Wardlaw. If this is your first time listening to the UCR podcast, please follow us so you will get future episodes as they're released. If you like what you're hearing, leave us a review wherever you're listening. We definitely appreciate that, and it all helps. Here's our conversation with Jeff Pilston of Foreigner. Don't worry, I can confirm he is still rocking like docking. Enjoy.
There I am. Okay.
Look at that. Yeah. Already back where we would expect you to be in the studio.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. My man cave.
It doesn't seem like there's much time where you're not working in the studio on something. Like, it seems like you still enjoy that part of your career.
Oh, I absolutely do. I mean, I love the recording studio. I don't get enough time in here, to be honest with you. I mean, when I'm home, you know, I also have a family, so I want to do that. But yeah, as much as I can record, all good.
I wanted to dig in because obviously you guys crossed an interesting milestone recently in Atlantic City, the final concert after 20 years with Kelly. And that had to be especially interesting for you, since you have been there since day one when Mick put together the new lineup with you and Kelly and Jason and everybody.
It was a very special moment, deeply emotional. We also had some fun with it, and we pulled some pranks. We wanted to make it a memorable night that not only Kelly would never forget, but none of us would ever forget. I also wanted to pay tribute to Kelly, because, which I have been at shows recently, but just because he made such a huge contribution to this band. And, you know, he's a vital element in what has gotten the band to where, you know, where it is today. So, you know, we're grateful to him. We're sad he's gone. We're going to miss him terribly. He's a brother. But we're also really excited for his future. He's got a great life ahead of him. And we're excited for the future of the band, as is he. I mean, it could not have been a better transition. You know, those kind of things can be ugly. And this one was absolutely not. And that's a testament to everybody being cool, Kelly especially being cool, and just the nature of this music and this band is that cream does rise to the top. And once Luis's voice was uncovered and we all realized what he had, including Kelly, and the future became so clear to us, this whole transition just fell into place naturally. And we couldn't have asked for a better one, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I know that I think Kelly from the stage mentioned that humor has been a big part of his time with the band. And I think he even called out you and said that the two of you would get into some humor out there on the road. So you mentioned the pranks. What were some of the pranks on the final night or that final weekend?
Well, okay. So for one thing, And I got to give my wife credit because it was her idea. But when he did his announcement for Dirty White Boy, and he asked, you know, is there anybody out there that has a, on the word naughty partner, which is what he usually says, we pressed a button which put a device called a harmonizer in place that made his voice sound like a chipmunk. So he said, are there any women out there with a naughty partner? Totally threw him. It was really funny. He started laughing hysterically and, you know, said a couple more words in the chipmunk voice, which was great. So we did that. We brought everybody up on stage for I Want to Know What Love Is, including all the wives and families. And that was great. We did, you know, we have a bunch of inside jokes in this band. So we recorded some little messages that Michael was able to trigger. Michael, our keyboard player, was able to trigger during the show. Little expressions that we have that would mean absolutely nothing to anybody else. So I'm not even going to go into it, but stuff that we heard and we were laughing at. So it was a whole night of fun. At the end of Hot Blooded, our crew came out and silly stringed Kelly and just doused him with it. So it was a great night.
That sounds like a good reason to have in-ear monitors, just to be able to play those inside jokes through the in-ear monitors.
Yeah, actually, I think they were coming through the PA, but they were quiet. So I don't think anybody really noticed them.
Well, that's funny, man. Well, it comes at the 20-year mark as far as his tenure in the band. And I'd like to go back to those early days when Mick was putting all this together with you guys. Like, how did you first get the call to be part of it for folks that are not familiar with that history, which is pretty substantial at this point?
Okay. Well, so in the year 2000, I did a movie called Rockstar and Jason Bonham was also in that movie. And he and I hit it off really well during the movie, both musically, because we had to play together and we recorded together. So we were, you know, we spent a lot of time together and, you know, just personally, we got along great. And we even wrote a song that didn't actually make the movie, but it made the soundtrack. So we just had a good rapport. So when Mick Jones called him in 2004 and said, hey, I want to do something, you know, he wasn't sure whether it'd be a solo thing or what. Well, Jason kind of talked him into doing Foreigner, and Jason suggested having me involved. So I came down, we rehearsed for a few days, did a show in Santa Barbara, and it was just an immediate chemistry, immediate great connection. We just connected musically really well, just note one. It was just locked into place. And so we, you know, that was the beginning of, we brought Jeff Jacobs in, we brought Tom Gimbel back, and that was the beginning of our run. Kelly didn't come around until the following March.
Sure.
Once he got involved, it just all went nuclear and went straight, you know, I mean, we went from being like what we thought was going to be some weekend work to full time, and it just skyrocketed from there.
Yeah, being here in Cleveland, I can remember that. After about the fourth time or so that you all came through and sold out the House of Blues, I was like, there's something to this. Clearly these guys, yeah. For me as a longtime Foreigner fan, clearly these guys aren't terrible if they keep filling up the house. So, but it was kind of interesting timing because like Journey was one of the major bands that had done something like this. Obviously, Sammy Hagar and Van Halen, like they made a big splash about a decade plus prior, but outside of there were just certain bands like AC/DC, Van Halen that had made the switch, but it wasn't the norm. So I think that Journey was one of the first that really kind of set the template that maybe something like this was possible. How you spoke to this a little bit, but how were you feeling about the prospects of the new version at that time in 2005 being something that people would show up for as far as the fans?
Well, you know, it's weird. I had absolutely zero doubt. I could feel how strong we were from the first notes. I mean, seriously, when we played together, you know, when you're in a great band, it just, you can feel it. It's very apparent. And I knew that the songs were timeless and incredible. So I gotta say I had zero doubt, you know, I'm an artist, so I get neurotic and insecure. Certainly about myself, but I never, ever doubted that the band, especially when Kelly got involved, because it just all of a sudden it's like, okay, we got all, you know, we check all the boxes. And so I knew it was just a matter of going out there, playing, showing what we got, and it worked.
It had to be something for you, the moment when you first plug in and you're playing, hearing that guitar tone of Mick Jones.
Well, you know, that was one of the first things that actually caught me is when we started playing, is I realized very quickly that Mick Jones was a highly underrated guitarist because his songwriting kind of overshadowed the fact of what a great guitar player he was. And, you know, I mean, that's a good problem to have. You know, he's in the Songwriters Hall of Fame as well as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But we immediately connected on the guitar playing level. And, you know, I have worked with some pretty incredible guitar players, George Lynch, Michael Schenker, you know, Reb Beach. I mean, I have quite a list of guys that are really incredible. Right away, Mick and I connected on a musical level, and it was a great feeling. And like I say, I sort of felt like, okay, man, I hope he gets appreciated. And he did. I think until, you know, he had some health problems, I think he really did kind of reestablish himself as a guitar player for a lot of people. And that's a good thing.
What would you say is kind of the riff that really kind of caught you early on? Because I think that's one thing that really kind of hits you as you're hearing all these songs, is that whether it's the intro to Double Vision or whatever it is, like the riffs are a big part of the songs. Like, he's one of those guys that those are sometimes as much as the hook as the actual lyrical or vocal hook.
Well, from the day I first heard Feels Like the First Time, I thought, that is great. I mean, it's an incredible song, for one thing. I mean, just the whole song is like, it's kind of like the perfect heavy rock song that could be played on the radio. You know, it's kind of the perfect template for that. And in fact, I was a fan from minute one when I heard that. I got attracted to the band because of Ian McDonald, because I was a prog guy. I was totally into Yes and Genesis and all that and King Crimson. So I had heard about Foreigner as being the band with the guy from King Crimson. That's how I got attracted to it. And then when I heard it on the radio, when I first heard Feels Like the First Time, I thought, perfect song, amazing guitar riff. So that's the one that first caught me 48 years ago.
The prog-ish element of Foreigner is something that sometimes passes some folks by, but there is that whole Ian McDonald part of it. And I appreciated that when Mick was still out with you guys, that was kind of his moment that he would have in the set. So for you as a prog guy, that had to be a lot of fun playing Star Rider.
Oh, still is. We've been playing it recently as well. I love that song. I love playing that song. Yes, it was really fun. And I loved the way we did it live, because I thought we did it much heavier than the record, which I thought worked well live. But I'm a huge Ian McDonald fan, still am to this day. The fact that I got to work with him and connect with him was really great. And in fact, we had, shortly before he passed, we were talking about me working on a next solo record of his, and I was really excited about that. So, I mean, his passing was devastating to me. But I think his influence on Foreigner is highly underrated and underappreciated. So the fact that we do Star Rider, that we've been doing Star Rider recently, I hope kind of brings him into the memory of everyone, because he really was. I mean, God, that first record, I mean, I've gotten to examine it really close. And the tracks, like Long, Long Way From Home, the saxophone parts on that are just brilliantly put together. And it's very Crimson-like because it's Ian, but it's genius. And he just had some really, really amazing ideas. That's a part of the band that I intend to never let people forget if I get the chance.
So who's handling the secondary vocal when you guys do Star Rider these days?
Well, these days, when we were doing it recently, Luis, who's going to be the lead singer now, was singing mixed parts, and Kelly was singing Lou's parts, like cool. Kelly would do when we did it with Mick. I'm not sure what we're, I mean, I'm sure at some point we'll revisit it. We have, you know, first we're doing a tour of Canada, and we already have a set list in there where there's not going to be time for Star Rider because we're doing some other special things on that set list, which I'm very excited about. And then after that, we do a set of shows with Foreigner 4. And because we're doing the entirety of Foreigner 4, there won't be time for Star Rider in that set. Then we're doing orchestral shows in the spring where there probably won't be time for Star Rider. But at some point, I'm sure we'll revisit it. And it'll be interesting to see how we do it live now.
So you mentioned earlier uncovering Luis and the idea that you've got this singer that could be the guy to come in and take over the role. Like, how did that kind of happen that way as far as figuring out that he could be the guy?
Okay. Well, you know, it's when he joined the band 5 years ago, we knew he was a great singer. I mean, he came in and auditioned, and obviously he was a great singer with a lot of capability, as well as a great guitar player. But what happened was, is when Kelly then decided he was going to retire, at first, Luis got really upset. He was like, oh, man, I just joined this band. And, you know, I mean, you know, this is great. And we got this amazing chemistry. Why are you going to do this? And he was begging Kelly to stay. Well, when Kelly said, no, man, I really, it's time for me to leave. Time for me to move on. Luis just kind of stepped up. And what happened was, is Michael and Bruce, guitar and keyboardist, they were doing these events at breweries called VIBs, very important beers. And they would just, you know, bring out some acoustic guitars and play. Well, they invited Luis along to do it. And he then sang Foreigner songs. And when people started hearing him sing the Foreigner songs, it was like, wait a minute here. So he just stepped up. I mean, he never planned on being the singer of Foreigner. But when Kelly said, no, I'm really going to retire, he just was like, he was angry. He was like, no, we got to keep this band together. And he just stepped up, sang the crap out of these songs. I mean, he just sings them with so much heart and yet holds the original intention of the songs. Lou Graham is really excited about Luis doing it. He's fully endorsing Luis as singer, which is a pretty cool thing. And he just stepped up to the plate, and it was just an obvious thing. Obvious.
Yeah, it's been pretty special, the relationship that has been developed anew with Lou Graham. Like, he seems to have a really good level of comfort with you and the guys.
Yeah, he's been so great. And having him there, now, not only does it really make the family feel even more complete, because we do really feel like a family out there, and that's not smoke. That's true. That's
the sure.
Truth. And having Lou feel part of that, Lou with his sons often come on the road with us, it's just amazing. It's just an amazing feeling. Joking around with him, getting stories about the young band, about them in the early days, is so great. And, you know, what better source? I mean, I got my fill of them from Mick, which was great through the years. But now I get to see a little bit from Lou's perspective. It's amazing. And it just makes the circle feel complete.
I think you obviously know what the voice of Lou means to Foreigner fans. And one really almost kind of visual representation of that was when Foreigner gets inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I talked about this with Lou, but it was super cool to just see the reverence that Kelly Clarkson had singing with Lou, like just the genuine affection that you could see the way that performance was handled. Like, it was so cool. And what a great performance.
Yeah, it was pretty magical. Well, for one thing, Kelly Clarkson was just a sweetheart, and she was so amazing to deal with. She just came in there deferential to whatever we wanted and Lou wanted, but then sang the songs with conviction and heart and worked with us. I mean, she was not a diva for one iota of a second, and she certainly could be. I mean, she's of that caliber, but she was just great. And Lou poured his heart out, and I think it just made the performance one of those magical things. And you know, it's a testament to both of them. They both sang. I mean, and Demi Lovato as well. She gave it her all. It was really a powerful performance, and that's due to the singers really delivering. And you know, the band did too. Of course, Slash was great. Slash also was really cool and never had an attitude or anything. You know, we're friends anyways, but I mean, it was just really cool. So there was some magic. And by the way, it was a struggle to get there because the crew at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame are not the most cooperative people in the world. It was very, very difficult. But finally at the last minute, and you know, it never sounded all that great to us. But you know, Chad Smith was playing with conviction, and we just all kind of locked in, gave it our all, and through the difficulties of the sound, we made it work. And then, like I say, the singers really delivered. And you're right. I think Lou's heart and soul kind of set that precedent.
Chad Smith seems like a guy that he'll give anybody on stage 200% more energy when you're playing with a guy like that. He's like a really inspiring player.
He truly is. And as a bass player, it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of ideal. He so plays for the song, and he so plays for the band. And, you know, you could just feel him connecting with everybody. He's not in his own world. He's very connected. And it's just a real powerful feeling. And what you see is exactly how it feels for the musicians.
Well, one final guy we should mention on that tip as far as Hall of Fame is the Red Rocker. What was the experience of playing with the Red Rocker?
Well, I've known Sammy for years. I mean, you know, Dokken toured with Sammy Hager in 1980.
Yeah, Monsters of Rock.
40 years ago. So, I've known Sammy a long time. He's great. He was funny. He came in and was just, he's kind of a firecracker, you know. So, I mean, we love him for that. But he was great. I mean, everybody was great. And everybody just did their thing. And like I say, made for a magical night.
What's it like for you now being the senior guy in Foreigner? Our editor pointed that out, that you're the senior guy at the present moment.
I am. Well, you know, hey, listen, there's a responsibility aspect to it because I am the band leader now. That's something I take seriously, but I have a sense of humor about it, you know, and my goal is that everyone thrives. And my goal is that, number one, we keep Mick Jones's vision alive and breathing, which I think we do. And number two, that it feels like a band, because there's nothing worse than going and seeing a band and they're just either, you know, phoning it in or playing, you know, by rote or whatever. You know, I want it to feel great every night. I want everyone to feel like they're contributing and that their contribution is important, and that we connect, because this music is great music. And, you know, you could put a bunch of B-grade players out there and it would still sound good. I mean, it would, you know, they're Foreigner songs. But delivering them with that special magic element that we're capable of and doing it every night, that's my goal with this thing. And I think we get really, really close to that. I'm very, very happy with how we connect. The band right now is in an amazing place. And we're all really excited about Luis taking over and the way that's going to kind of lead us into little new musical avenues keeps us very, very excited. And as long as I can do that as senior guy, band leader, I feel great about it.
Yeah. And there is the moment, you kind of alluded to this a little while ago, where you all had to start playing shows without Mick out of necessity, health reasons and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And did it ever feel like it would even be possible eventually to continue to play shows without him as Foreigner? Because I think, as you probably know, that's been there's always people out in the fan base, readers, whatever, they're going to say whatever they're going to say. We put up articles and there'll be somebody in the comments, they'll say tribute band. Right, so there's people that are like, this is not Foreigner, yet I've gone to see the band. You guys are playing these songs. It sounds like Foreigner. For me, that's been listening to these albums for decades, it has that thing. If it didn't have that thing, and obviously these moments now where you're having like Lou and Rick and the other folks back in the fold, that just helps to further kind of galvanize it. But you're always going to have the detractors. So was it ever a moment where you felt like it wasn't possible to move forward with that band name?
Well, I mean, when we realized that Mick was going to be out for a while because of the health issues, sure, the first thing crosses your mind as well, how do we continue? But Mick was very firm that he wanted us to. And and then when Bruce got involved, Bruce Watson, it became clear that the music transcends the persona, or the personnel, I should say. And even without Mick, somehow the music makes us all rise to the occasion. And again, that is my job, because like you say, there is that thing that has to be there. And it is not something that can be put in words. It is a absolutely a, what do you call it? It's a magical element about the whole thing that has to be there. But I believe it comes from the quality of the songs and the fact that myself, and then for a long time, Kelly, were so close to Mick that we're able to crystallize Mick's vision. You know, we worked with him really hard, and, you know, and Mick allowed me to produce all the live records and a lot of the stuff that we did over the years. And it's, you know, Mick is obviously an incredible producer on his own, but the fact that he trusted me with that meant that I had to work with him a lot and get to know how he thinks a lot about music. And I think that relationship has allowed me to kind of blossom into being responsible for that thing that you talk about live. And so when Bruce joined the band, this was the early days of all that, the vision kind of crystallized. And somehow the music made us rise above it, and we've been thriving ever since.
It's impressive, and credit to Bruce, because we've seen certainly Wolfgang Van Halen can play his dad's stuff and he has the tone. There's a bloodline there, but so often we hear with guitar players that it's in the hands, and like Mick has such a distinctive tone. And so the fact that that is not missing on stage, I think is big credit to Bruce and big credit to you guys for being able to pull that off. Because if that wasn't there, just as that one piece, it'd be very hard, I think, for me as a fan to hear that and go, okay, this sounds like Foreigner, because if that's missing, it doesn't. So big credit. Yeah.
Well, again, it's very important to us. We're very conscientious about it. So thank you.
Well, there's the new music that we've been enjoying with Lou that you all finished up together, Turning Back the Time. Now, Fool, If You Love Him, from this new Foreigner 4 box set. Like, how much additional stuff like this is there that's still in the works?
Quite a bit. And
nice.
My assistant musical director, a guy by the name of Tim Pedersen, actually, as we speak, is working on some of the stuff. In fact, I'm going to hear one of the songs tomorrow that I know what state it was in when we found it, and he's been kind of working on it to kind of prep it. So I'll hear that tomorrow. There's also another track that we have, which is off of the Head Games record, that is a spectacular track. Lou wants to add a couple of harmonies to it, which he'll probably be doing relatively soon between now and when we do the Foreigner 4 shows. And then that one will be ready to be mixed. So there is, and we found 7 tracks off of the Agent Provocateur record, which I don't think we're going to finish all 7, but certainly 5 of them are really, really worth finishing up. So there's more to go through. There's, like I say, the 2 from Head Games that are going to be finished. There's probably, like I say, probably 5 from Agent Provocateur. And then there's other pieces of songs that Lou and Mick wrote over the years, which we plan on finishing. So there's a lot of stuff in the pipeline. Obviously, we travel all the time, so it's hard to find time in the studio, which is why my assistant musical director is doing a lot of prep work for it. He's also a very capable musician producer on his own, so he's able to make a lot of progress. But yes, there's stuff in the pipeline. It's I can't give you dates on when it's going to come out, but know that we're working on it.
I think what's cool about this new 4 box set is it's the first real significant expansion of one of these albums. And for folks that have not heard this yet, like, it really does give you the kind of fly on the wall perspective of what it must have been like to be part of these sessions. So it's just good hearing you talk that there is that much stuff that it could be possible to do other similar type album expansions for some of the other records, because I think they're all kind of near and dear to fans, you know, record to record.
Yeah. Well, that's the objective. And like I say, some of these songs are really high. The Head Games one that's going to come out, it's a great song. It was kind of ahead of its time. And you know, for 1979, and Ian McDonald, by the way, had a lot to do with this track. For 1979, it was a little ahead of its time. So I'm really excited what we've done to it already and what we're going to do. Tim, my assistant musical director did. And Lou's really excited about it. It's an A song. I'm telling you, it is every bit as good as anything else on Head Games. It was just ahead of its time. So I'm glad it's coming out.
Last couple things
Whenever
from my
done.
Side.
I have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Last couple things from my side, but what's been the experience of working with Lou on this stuff? Like, I would be very curious to hear how you take what you had with something like Fool If You Love Him and get it to the finish line, because it's all pretty seamless when you hear it on the record.
Well, that was a really magical experience. I mean, and when we were touring South America, Lou and I spent quite a bit of time kind of going over tracks and listening to things, and I'd get his perspective on things. He thinks he's got four tracks somewhere in Rochester that he can uncover for me. So he's looking for that. He knows the studio where he thinks they're at. Anyway, so working with Lou has been amazing. You know, it's like the amazing thing about stuff like this is I think we both convert to our 20-year-old selves when this happens, which is really cool. Because Lou has a very youthful, enthusiastic musician side to him that when you tap into that, man, it's the best. And so him working, Fool If You Love Him was just magic. I mean, you know, it was like, Lou, there's only one verse, but it's totally something that would work for you. What do you think? And he was like, yeah. So, you know, he wrote the verses. He sang them great. The rest of us kind of worked on the track. It was the most amazing combination of old and new I've ever experienced, because I've never gotten to do that with any other band. I mean, that, you know, if Dokken were to ever revisit an old track, it would be with the same guys. So, well, providing we're all still alive by then. But
sure.
So, but this was like new and old. It was absolutely fabulous. And there's more to come. So how exciting is that?
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. You mentioned the 20-year-old versions of yourselves. It's always kind of interesting when you see, for example, Buddy Guy at 85 walk out on stage and suddenly go from being this 85-year-old guy to being Buddy Guy, as we know Buddy Guy. Like, it's really something to watch that switch flip with anybody.
Yeah, it really is. Well, it's the magic of music, isn't it?
Well, so final thing here, and that just is, this box set also has a full album remix of Foreigner 4. What did you all kind of want to address by doing that?
The objective of the remix, which I think is brilliant, by the way, Wynn Davis
is
the mixing engineer, who is just phenomenal. Well, the first thing that came along was, well, we're going to do Atmos remixes of the whole thing. So the idea on the Atmos was, okay, let's really use all, you know, everything we can to really give it space and dimension. And Foreigner 4 is such a perfect record to do it with because, you know, when Thomas Dolby came in, he was adding all these very futuristic keyboard things that you hear on the record, but in Atmos, you really hear it. Probably how, actually, Thomas gave a very positive thumbs up on the whole thing. It really, really makes Foreigner 4 really a special record, and it gives it this futuristic element that's amazing. Well, because we were going to do the Atmos, then the suggestion was done, let's remix it for the future, I should say. And what that means is utilizing the technology to give it a little more solid low end, like new modern recordings have. Don't get in the way of what the originals had, you know, don't ever interfere with the vision of the song per se, but give it some modern low end so that when it's on new systems, it can sound a little bit bigger. And that's, and you know, crisper in elements, there's moments on the record that the recording was, you know, needed a little help and we were able to do that. So, and not that it was recorded great, but you know, in 1980, things were different, you know? So, but anyway, so, when I say modernize, we didn't want to make it sound like a hip hop record, of course, but we wanted to just give it a little fuller low end, a little bit of clarity and atmosphere. And I think Wynn did a brilliant job, and everybody, Lou and Mick, are both really happy. So, yay!
You know, with these shows you guys have coming up in December where you're going to be focusing on the four record, like just this is not the first time you've gone deep into the record, Jeff, but like just as a whole, like what do you appreciate about the album itself?
Well, I mean, it's a masterpiece, you know? I mean, there's some incredible singing on it. There's some incredible playing it. There's some really visionary songwriting. And it's really fun to do. I mean, like, you know, and there's some challenging songs. Like Break It Up is a very challenging song to pull off with all the vocals and everything. All the keyboard stuff. It's involved, but you know, we are so up for the challenge. And, you know, listen, this band is filled with A-level musicians, and you know, we get to be A-level musicians on this. So it was really fun. But having the challenge of doing it and pulling it off live with all the vocals that are involved, because several of the songs have really, I'm Gonna Win, Don't Let Go, really involved vocals. So it was really a challenge, but really fun. We just rehearsed it actually last week in Atlantic City before we did the shows with Kelly. So we're ready. We're, you know, those shows are going to be pretty epic. And I just think doing this, the record in its entirety, is going to feel so great. The audience is going to be in for some surprises. And what more can you ask than that?
That's fantastic. One final thing that I just want to throw in, and that just is, midway through all this, you talked about how when Kelly announced he was going to go to you guys, Luis is the guy that steps up and says, man, you can't go, you can't do this. And that's pretty inspiring to hear that the guy that had been there one of the shortest amount of times is one of the guys stepping up saying, you can't do this. So it was that kind of, were there similar, did you push back? Did other people push back as far as like trying to get him to stay?
I know we all wanted the band to continue as is, sure. But by the time Kelly made the announcement, I knew a bit ahead of time. And, you know, he and I are very close. And I knew where his head was coming from. So I knew it was the time to leave for him. I understood where he was coming from. So I never, once he made the announcement, I never tried to talk him into staying. No. Because I knew where his head was at. We had already been through that because, like I say, he had told me first that he was going to be leaving. I think the other guys pretty quickly accepted it as well. Luis being the newest guy, he was just so in love with the band, he just didn't want to see anything happen to it. I actually, to be perfectly honest with you, I didn't know who. But I knew before Luis stepped into the picture, I just had a feeling some great singer is going to come along. This music is too good. The opportunities for the band are too good. So I just kind of, I wasn't worried about it, if that makes any sense. Very early on knew Luis was going to be the guy. And once that happened, boom, we're done.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, man, always a pleasure to talk music with you. And thank you for taking time here and enjoy the time there in the studio. Enjoy the family time. And we'll look forward to seeing you guys back out on the road. Obviously, Canadian shows, but also the Foreigner 4 shows. Going to be a fun rest of the year.
Thank you, man. Great interview. And thank you for your time as well.
We've reached the end of another episode of the UCR podcast. It is Matt Wardlaw. We appreciate you listening. If you enjoy what you're hearing, please rate and review wherever you are listening and hit subscribe so that you'll receive future episodes of the podcast from Ultimate Classic Rock.